Live from Chicago, this is John Dempsey with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. First tonight, we remember America's anchorman, Walter Cronkite. Joining me with their thoughts tonight, our author and media historian, Wally Pedrazic. And as always, our political panel, we've got Republican Dan Proft, Democrat Kitty Kurth, and David Yellen, the dean of Loyola University's law school here in the city of Chicago. Our program tonight coming to you from the XM Sirius studios on Chicago's Great West Side. And we want to hear from you tonight. Our phone lines are open at 800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in tonight for Bruce Dumont. And we're coming to you tonight 2 days after the death of a giant in American journalism, Walter Cronkite. The legendary CBS television anchorman died Friday at the age of 92. In many ways, the death of Walter Cronkite is a reminder of how much the media landscape has changed in the days since he was known as the most trusted man in America. What happened to that media landscape, and why was Cronkite so important? I'll start off the question tonight with Wally Pedrazic, the co-author of the television history book Watching TV. Wally is a television historian and the consulting curator at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Wally, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
Were we as a nation better news consumers back in the days of Walter Cronkite?
Well, you have to realize what we mean by the days of Walter Cronkite, because he stretches way back to print roots, to radio roots, to covering World War II, and then becomes a television anchor, first for special events, and then not until the 60s of the CBS Evening News. And all that's very important, because he was like the last truly of an old breed. It was not a cult of personality. It was a wire reporter's focus on getting the facts, getting it straight, and delivering the story as clearly as possible. And that may have had a lot to do with why he won such a warm spot in viewers' hearts, because he was a straight shooter without making it an affectation. It just was the way he approached journalism.
He did not really have matinee idol looks. Like today, a TV news anchorman is basically hired for one of the main things they're hired for is their looks. But he didn't really have that look, did he?
He was handsome like your uncle is handsome. I mean, but I think it's important, again, to think maybe a good analogy would be like to Johnny Carson. Johnny Carson didn't invent late-night talk, but he defined it. And Walter Cronkite didn't invent being an anchor person, but he defined the role superbly. Even when he didn't start out as the number one rated anchor person in the news competition back in the 60s. Huntley and Brinkley were the reigning champs of the evening news. But Cronkite was a well-rounded, well-informed anchor, in that apart from anchoring the news, he was also the man to go to for space shuttle coverage, space launch coverage. He, of course, famously was absolutely tickled and excited when we landed on the moon, an anniversary we were noting, right now.
40 years ago tomorrow.
And also, he was determined, as I say, to bring the story clearly to those at home without chasing every rumor, so to speak. And of course, this was most famously seen with his live on-the-air reaction to the news that President Kennedy had been assassinated and was reported dead. So that, I think, also cemented his affection between those who were around back then watching and him as an anchor. He was a trusted anchor who generally did not inject himself into the story, but for that one moment, obviously, events were so large that even he paused a moment, just as many viewers at home paused a moment and said, "Oh my gosh, look what just happened."
And then he regained his composure.
And then he regained his composure,
and he moved on. I want to ask Dan Proft a question. A lot of people have been saying in the couple of days since Walter died that he was, you know, as Wally just said, he was known for his objectivity. But a lot of conservatives say that he was a closet liberal, a fact that he made no effort to disguise in the years after his retirement. What are your thoughts?
Well, right. So he wasn't a closet liberal because he kind of admitted it. Walter Cronkite isn't my era, but I think what Wally's saying, what you said earlier about the kind of network affiliate newscasters we have today, distinguish those from his generation is interesting, because I think one of the things he did do from a lot of the clips I've seen of big stories, and thank God for YouTube and such things, right? We can still memorialize these things. He provided context and consequence to news stories. And I think that's precisely what's missing from the newscasts of today and the newscasters who read the news today. And I think that's why you've seen these evening newscasts go, or that they are going the way of the daily print newspapers, which is that nobody under 40 watches them, and folks over 40 that watch them kind of do it out of habit more so than really getting some relevant information about goings on in the day.
Wally, did that happen because the networks began to look at news as a profit center, whereas in the 1960s? They did not look at their news programs as a real money-making venture.
Oh, sure. That is definitely an element of what happened, because news was essentially a responsibility, a prestige item, a loss leader, if you will. And then there came, I was talking with one producer years back who said, yeah, he still remembered the day someone walked in and said, "You've got to make money now. You've got to cover your costs." And that just changes the whole attitude, because so much of news can't cover the costs. If you're trying to do a news story and it means that you're sitting there for the weeks on end and then nothing happens.
If you're staking out the home of a public official or something, that costs
exactly.
A lot of money.
Yes. And so there was, again, coming out of the tradition from World War II, through the Cold War and into really tumultuous times of the 60s, whether it be assassination, civil rights issues, the war in Vietnam, there were some very important issues being covered, and there was absolutely no guarantee that the news presentation could be packaged such that it would make a profit. That doesn't mean that the evening news didn't generate cash, but believe me, they were not on the same, held to the same standards as, say, an entertainment program like, "Oh, well, that's not working, cut it out."
Kitty Kurth.
Wally, when I was listening to the initial coverage of Mr. Cronkite's death, I found it very disturbing that one station was reporting that he died in New York and another station in Martha's Vineyard. And I thought, oh, you know, he would really be mad that people are not getting the facts right.
Whatever happened to accuracy? You are listening to Beyond the Beltway from Chicago. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We will be back right after this break. 1-800-723-8289. Join us from Chicago.
I wasn't getting past a certain point with the interviews.
This is Tamar from Washington, D.C.
Gray kind of says, does he have the energy to do the job?
And then Tamar tried Just for Men.
And when I went into the interview, I just went into the interview with a new renewed energy or something. And it was the first time I left the place knowing I had the job. It really wasn't anything magical or anything, but it was magical to me.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
With welcome rewards from Hotels.com, you get a free night after accumulating 10 nights with any of their partner hotels.
Surely my boutique hotel is not included in that.
Yes, it is, lady.
My band, Sned Leplin, stays in chain hotels just off the freeway. Those included?
With Hotels.com, you bet, Mr. Brojangles.
What about a bed and breakfast?
Faux shizzle.
Hotels on the moon?
No.
Accumulate 10 nights, even at different hotels, and earn a free night. Welcome rewards from Hotels.com. Smart. So smart. Some restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are listening live to Beyond the Beltway from Chicago. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in tonight for Bruce Dumont. Our guests, Republican Dan Proft, Democrat Kitty Kurth, and David Yellen, the dean of the law school at Loyola University in Chicago. We're also joined on the phone by author and media historian Wally Pedrazic, talking about the death of Walter Cronkite. And David Yellen, you had made a comment about your viewing habits after Walter left the broadcast.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it before, but listening to Wally, I realized I never watched network news with any regularity after Walter Cronkite. I was born in 57, so I was alive through a lot of Cronkite's big moments in the 60s, and he represented something really important. And when he passed on the scene, when he was no longer the anchor, it all started to become more diffuse, even before technology accelerated that.
And, of course, one of those big moments in the 60s was, of course, we've talked about it, the death of John F. Kennedy in Dallas. And right now, John is in Austin, Texas, listening to on KLBJ, and he's got some thoughts he'd like to share. Good evening, John.
Yes, this is John from Austin, Texas, and I'm originally from Ohio.
Hello? Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I was noticing during the 60s, Walter Cronkite's nightly evening news show, he gave a lot of good, accountable, reputable coverage to the Cultural Revolution, things like the campus disruption at the Ohio State University with the Ohio State National Guard and the gender gap. And I think maybe the problem is the sports political complex today in America. It doesn't have a cable news network, doesn't have a solid, reputable, credible broadcaster anymore. Like Walter Cronkite was back in the 60s. They're all weak personifications.
John,
we need a good, credible broadcaster to tell us the straight news, because we're not getting the straight news about what is actually going on, et cetera, in, i.e. the college scene.
John, we thank you for joining us. Wally Pedrazic, what do you think about that? Is objectivity a thing of the past on some of these screaming cable channels?
Well, he touches on a good point. I mean, if you have the demeanor of Walter Cronkite, even if you're touching onto some very controversial issues, if the audience trusts that even if you might prefer one side or the other, you're still going to deliver it to you straight, then they could accept, hey, let's have a little bit more about civil rights. Let's have a little bit more about what's going on behind this campus unrest. I'll give you an example of Vietnam. I mean, Walter Cronkite went out a couple years before the famous LBJ watching TV saying, if I've lost Cronkite, I've lost Middle America. Well, a couple years before then, Cronkite went on, and he was genuinely, as a veteran of covering wars, very enthused about, wow, you've really got some good firepower here. The soldiers are top-notch and all. He was very enthusiastic about the operation. He comes back sometime later and said, you know, it's not working. No disrespect to any of the soldiers involved, but it's not working. And I just wanted to share that observation. Well, when someone with his reputation shared an observation like that, the ripples were felt.
Speaking of LBJ's remark about if I've lost Cronkite, I've lost Middle America, let's go to La Crosse, Wisconsin. A caller, you've got some thoughts about that and Vietnam and Cronkite? Oh, that caller's gone. Dan Proft, I want to ask you, if we're talking about objectivity, and if we look at something like Fox News, Fox News caters to the conservative audience, and it is a success. Is there anything wrong with that?
And MSNBC caters to the left-wing audience, and it's not really a success. So I think it tells you something about where, frankly, that the landscape was such that people lost faith in the objectivity of the nightly newscast from the major networks.
Creating a need for something like Fox?
Well, Fox fills a niche, and Fox has been successful because people have rejected the information they're getting from the major networks because it's clear that they're left wingers, they're left of center. And like you said, Cronkite was a avowed liberal too. But the difference with today's newscasters and also major print institutions, which are declining in relevance and sway, is that they cherry pick facts. They are not interested in fomenting debate. They're not interested in encouraging thought and discussion. They're interested in prosecuting an agenda. And that's the difference between the left wing, established old media of today and what Walter Cronkite chose to pursue in terms of his professional demeanor during his heyday.
Kitty Kurth, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I was just trying to. I wanted Dan to give an example of prosecuting an agenda. I just don't.
Dan Rather, Peter Jennings.
Those guys haven't been on TV for
a long time. Yeah, right. And that's my point, is after the Cronkite era, that's when the decline of network affiliate news began. And it's still kind of on that downward spiral.
No, I know. And I'm just asking.
How about Katie Couric?
Yeah,
she's still
what agenda
the news.
Is she prosecuting?
Was there a liberal bent in American journalism, which became more evident in the days after Watergate? David, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think the mainstream media has always been, on average, left of center. But I don't think that explains the decline of the network news. I think they got boring. I think, you know, some things on the networks are still done well, like George Stephanopoulos' show or Meet the Press, where you really do have a clash of ideas rather than sort of snippets of news on a couple of items. I think people wanted more, and they wanted different kinds of news.
Well, I think you also need to talk about the proliferation of cable in general. There's more choices now. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day, there was CBS, NBC, and ABC. That was pretty much it. The reason why everybody saw the civil rights movement, the reason why everybody saw the Kennedy assassination, the reason why everybody saw the man on the moon was because there were three things
only
three on TV.
Things you could watch. Right. Wally Podrazik.
Yeah, and there was, you're absolutely right that there was no place else to turn. But I would like to go back to the what are people hungering for. It depends on the type of news event you're looking at. For instance, famously, Fox coverage of the Republican convention in 2004, hey, here's a surprise, they did very well. But for an event, some recent events where it is a non-political issue, it's just a major event. For instance, CNN very often emerges as the go-to source for, all right, I want to hear the coverage pretty much blanket, but I think that they'll be a little more down the middle than, say, Fox might be on that same event. But even more important is the point of more choices. In other words, before you really did have to wait until a certain time each night to get your news summary, to get your news catch-up, so to speak. And now you don't, and you haven't had to do that since just about the time that Walter Cronkite stepped down. So it was not just him leaving. It was the entire landscape changing. So even if you wanted to say the most important place to turn is the network evening news, fact of the matter is, for the 23 hours, 23 and a half hours in between those broadcasts, you had other sources.
Let's go to Shirley, who's listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. Shirley's in Willowbrook, Illinois. Good evening, Shirley.
Hi, good evening. This is Shirley calling, and I am very sorry to say I will miss Walter Cronkite very much. I grew up in the 50s as a child, and, Walter, Cronkite was very much a part of my home because, really, it's like behind new black and white TVs, that was new technology of the time.
But Shirley, what if you had had more choices? What if you had had 40 different channels that you could watch back in the 50s? Would you still have watched Cronkite? Back in the, I guess he started in the 60s as the anchor of the broadcast. Would you have still watched him if you could have watched 40 other channels in 1964?
You know, I think back then, because we had one TV at home, I think that probably would have been my parents' choice. It's like because we had to make, choices at different times at home and part of the time. You know, we were watching things like, Garfield Goose at home. So I'm not exactly, certain that, news was like an important part of a child's agenda until I became older. But I do remember important things. I was in fifth grade. when President Kennedy was shot, and it still breaks my heart to this very day. You know, President Kennedy was somebody who made a very big, you know, impact in my life, because I kind of look at him as a person who saved us from, it's like, possible nuclear destruction in this country. I remember the days of living in Chicago with, you know, fallout shelters and, you know, it's like air raid sirens and, you know, routinely in school, you know, doing, you know, drills in the hallway, you know, the duck and cover drills and, you know, plunging under school desks.
Right.
And, you know, the stresses were different in that time, you know, but Walter was somebody who guided, you know, people through those times, just like we have people, you know, guiding us through times now. I think what does, you know, make it different are things that, you know, people have mentioned already, that there is, you know, competition on a national and a global level with, you know, the various, you know, stations, you know, CNN. Fox.
That's right. Shirley, we've got to move on, but we really do appreciate your thoughts. And I think Shirley very accurately pointed out this, the significance of, especially if you're a young person, growing up in the 1960s, remembering all of these significant events and all of the turbulence of the 60s. And Walter Cronkite was there for every single event, including tomorrow, the 40th anniversary of man landing on the moon. We will say goodbye to Wally Podrazik, the co-author of the TV history book, Watching TV. Wally, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for being here tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And a lot more coming up on our with our panel tonight on Beyond the Beltway. We'll be talking about the Sonia Sotomayor confirmation hearings next. This is Beyond the Beltway, coming to you tonight from Chicago.
Chemical plant I'd worked at for 12 years shut down, and I was looking for another place to work.
This is Danny from Baton Rouge.
And I think that first impression they get sometimes is a little too old. You know, why should we mess with him?
Then Danny got rid of his gray with Just for Men.
You know, they're not seeing the gray in the mustache, and they're not seeing the gray in the side of my hat. You know, if you feel better about yourself, you're going to feel better about everything else.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
I've worked in the dot-coms and in technology for the last 20 years. I noticed that there were a lot of younger guys, and I started not getting jobs.
This is John from Utah.
You were treated differently if you had gray hair and you were an older guy, and that's not only just at work, but everywhere.
Then John got rid of his gray with Just for Men.
You know, I started getting jobs, and they don't think of me as an old guy. The majority of the people I associate with are 20 or 30 years my junior, and I get along just fine with them.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
We are back. You are listening to Beyond the Beltway this evening from Chicago. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We want to hear from you tonight. Our number, 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. Our panelists this evening are conservative Dan Proft. Dan is a longtime media figure in the Chicago area. He has a law degree from Loyola University Law School in Chicago. He also runs his own public relations firm, is a media commentator on our flagship station, WLS AM 890, and is a recently announced Republican candidate for governor in Illinois. By doing this, Dan is hoping to become the first elected governor from Illinois since 1998 not to be indicted on federal corruption charges. I guess that would be 1994.
That's my slogan.
That's actually your slogan.
Yeah.
Elect me, I won't get indicted.
Right, right.
Dan, welcome.
Thank you.
Kitty Kurth is our liberal panelist tonight. She's the president of the Kurth Lampe Political Consulting Public Relations Firm, which she founded with her husband, Kevin Lampe. She's worked on countless campaigns, was also the Illinois campaign manager for the Paul Tsongas 1992 campaign. A very emotional. You just put everything you had into that campaign working for Paul Tsongas, didn't you?
Yes, I did. He was a wonderful man. And I, despite our political differences, I do wish Dan well in not getting indicted.
Thank you.
Whether you get elected or not.
Thank you. I appreciate
whether you
that.
Get elected or not, I'd prefer you stay out of jail.
Yes, thank you.
Speaking of jail, if you go to jail, David Yellen
right.
from Loyola Law School is the man you should call. He's a law professor and the dean of the Loyola University Law School in Chicago. He has also taught at Cornell Law School and New York Law School. David has argued before the U.S. Supreme Court and has served as counsel to the Judiciary Committee of the U.S. House of Representatives.
And you just spent a week with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Tell us about that.
Yes, we have a summer program in Rome. Loyola has a campus there, and many members of the Supreme Court do some teaching in the summer. And I've known Justice Ginsburg for some time, and she came over and spent a week teaching our, lecturing our students about constitutional law. She was a wonderful guest. The students loved meeting her. She's in great health. So it was really just wonderful to spend that time with her.
That was going to be my next question. Because of her health issues, do you see her being the next justice to step down? Or?
I feel quite confident in saying that she has no plans to step down anytime in the near future. She was on the go in Rome in addition to her teaching and meeting with the students. We were going out to meals, the opera, the ballet, museums. She's a remarkable woman. She's sharp as ever and very fit.
And she's about to have another woman join her on the U.S. Supreme Court. President Obama's Supreme Court nominee Sonia Sotomayor withstood questioning from the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee. There is now no doubt she will be confirmed. Several Republican senators say they will vote for her, and there's no plan for a Republican filibuster. But given the fact that she refused to state her position on controversial issues, were these hearings a waste of time, David Yellen?
The hearings were totally unenlightening, as they have been for the last several nominees. And it really suggests to me maybe we should go back to the old days where nominees did not appear before the Senate. Mostly it's been a instance where senators on both sides of the aisle get to embarrass themselves by showing how little they know about the way the Supreme Court works.
Why did we move away from the old way? Why did we start having these nominees appear before the Judiciary Committee?
Why did we start having them?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was just part of the idea of public disclosure, of more openness in government. You know, the idea that someone who's going to be serving for life on the highest court in the land ought to be questioned about their judicial philosophy. There's a lot of appeal to that, but especially in recent years after the Bork nomination and other things, the nominees have gotten so good at tightly answering questions and not revealing anything about their judicial philosophy that I think this process, the value of it, has kind of run its course.
And Robert Bork, of course, was nominated by President Reagan in 1987. And instead of denying his conservative background, Dan Proft, he embraced it and
yes,
he defended it.
Embraced it,
and
yes.
He was promptly defeated.
Yeah, 58-42. Yeah. Well, I thought there were some illuminating points. I mean, more on politics, though, than on judicial philosophy. A couple points. One was she apologized for this comment that had created such a firestorm about her being the wise Latina, and that means she's better able to make judicial decisions than white men or something. She kind of walked that back in, which I think was good. The other thing, though, that I thought was interesting was her disagreeing with President Obama in terms of his standard for selection, that empathy should have no role to play in making judgments, and it is only judgments should be made on the basis of the law. And so I thought it was still useful for her to make that explicit, even though we know that those things that were said by Barack Obama and the things that she said were silly. But it was good that she got those out there.
I doubt she really believes that, though.
That, well, maybe so.
Justice Alito, of course, during his confirmation process, went on and on about how his background as an Italian-American, having seen his family discriminated against on the basis of ethnicity and religion, that would impact how he heard civil rights cases.
Kitty Kurth.
I just want to say I think everybody's being a little disingenuous on this case. You bring to the table everything that went into your being. You know, I am here because I was a Democrat growing up in DuPage County. Experience shapes what you
see. One
of
the most Republican counties in America, by the way.
And so I've never been afraid to fight an uphill battle. But when I – on the Dukakis campaign, one of my mentors, Michael Hooley, a white guy from Boston, the first thing that he taught me was he said, we're never going to make a decision with eight white guys sitting around a table because you'll never get a wise decision when it's all one viewpoint. You need to have diversity at any table to have the strongest decision. And I firmly believe that whether it's the Supreme Court, the United States Senate, the United States Congress, if you have a bunch of people who all think the same way – you're not going to get a strong decision. But here's the problem.
Here's the problem with this, and this is the problem with the kind of race and gender identity politics that Democrats play. It's implicit in what you just said, Kitty, which is if you have people who all think the same way, you're not going to get a strong decision. Well, just because people – just because you have eight white guys – guess what? Not all white guys think the same
guess
way.
Guess what, Dan? None of those guys know what I've been through or what I feel. Without women at the table, without people of color, it is impossible.
Do they not know what you feel automatically because they're white men? Are they automatically incapable of empathy because they're white men?
Have you ever agreed with what a white man thinks?
Yes, but what I'm saying is you need a diversity of opinion. You need to have people that look at things, not people that just simply judge. You always get a stronger decision when you have a multiplicity of ideas going into it. That's the problem with the Republican Party. You guys all go into arguments thinking that you want to win. You never go into arguments thinking that you might learn something from the other people.
Please enlighten me. I thought we were talking about the Supreme Court, that is explicit in the Constitution that they are to interpret the law so that the law
is the standard.
The law is the lead, not where you grew up.
David Yellen.
I'm glad I'm not in between the two of you physically, but, you know, look, it's never the case that there is a single best qualified person for the Supreme Court.
Of course.
There are always a number of people who are more or less equally well qualified. And as long as the president picks one of those highly qualified people, there are obviously going to be other factors involved. And I see nothing wrong with having more than one woman on the Supreme Court be a factor.
But nobody's arguing that.
There are people arguing that, not you.
I don't care if there were a lot of people arguing that last week. Let me tell you something. I don't care if the Supreme Court is made up of nine women. I don't care if the Supreme Court is made up of nine African Americans. I don't care because it's not about your gender or your skin color. It's about what you think, the values that you'll represent, and your commitment to uphold the Constitution. Those are the requirements for the job.
Yeah, well, every member of the Supreme Court right now believes in upholding the Constitution. They just have very different views about what that means.
Of what that means and of interpretation.
1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Eduardo in Chicago, listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. Hi, Eduardo.
Yes, good evening. My point is that I don't think Ms. Sotomayor is qualified, and I don't think the Democrats are going to be able to count on the Latin vote because they're going to be taking it for granted. Traditionally, Puerto Ricans and Mexicans don't get along very well, so Mexicans ain't going to be like having block parties over Sotomayor's nomination.
Because she's a Puerto Rican, and are you a Mexican American, Eduardo?
Yes, I'm Mexican American, but I tend to lean more conservative. So obviously, I already have a bias, you know.
What do you mean she's not qualified, Eduardo?
Doesn't she have more experience
because
than any nominee?
She's pro affirmative action, and she didn't get in on her merit.
Well, wait, but what do you mean she didn't get on her merit?
I think Eduardo's making the point that if she was not an Hispanic woman, she would not have been. Now, is that your point, Eduardo? I think Eduardo's gone. But there's a white woman here in the city of Chicago named Diane Wood, who was on the short list of Obama and was highly qualified, but he went in a different direction. Do you think, David, that he chose Sotomayor because she is a Hispanic woman?
I think he chose her from among the best qualified people because she was an Hispanic woman. Diane Wood would have been a spectacular choice. She may well wind up on the Supreme Court. But there's been some bizarre stuff said about Sonia Sotomayor. She graduated summa cum laude from Princeton. I went to Princeton. I only graduated magna cum laude. You know, they don't give away those honors. That meant she was in the top couple of percent in her Princeton class.
And wasn't she valedictorian?
She was not valedictorian, but she was in the top 2%, she went and did very well at Yale Law School. She was a successful prosecutor. She's been a solid appeals court judge after being a very good district court judge.
Doesn't she have more judicial experience than any nominee in 100
years?
Yes,
we've got to take a break. We're talking about Sonia Sotomayor, and we will continue with our panel and your phone calls, 1-800-723-8289. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway from Chicago.
It's the medicine your mom gave you as a kid. The medicine you trusted when you were pregnant. And for many, it's what you rely on to ease arthritis pain. Tylenol has been trusted for over 50 years. And while store brands make pills that look just like Tylenol, it's important to know they're not made by Tylenol. The only way to get the brand you've trusted your whole life, the brand doctors recommend most, is to buy the brand doctors recommend most. Feel better. Tylenol. Use only as directed.
You know, I'd get the interview easily with my resume and everything, and then I'd walk in and I could just see their, you know, you can just see their expression. They think I'm too old.
This is Andy from Sydney, Ohio.
And a friend just told me, you know, one day, he said, why don't you try coloring your hair? And I said, worth a try. And the very next interview I had, I got the job. It could be coincidence, but I doubt it.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
From coast to coast, from border to border, you're listening to us tonight on Beyond the Beltway, live from Chicago. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. 1-800-723-8289. We are talking tonight about Sonia Sotomayor, President Obama's choice for the U.S. Supreme Court, and law professor David Yellen made a point about Obama's votes on Supreme Court nominees when he was a senator, David.
Yeah, President Obama, when he was in the Senate, voted against Chief Justice Roberts and against now Justice Alito and supported a filibuster of Justice Alito. Personally, I have a different view than either of those men, but they were both eminently qualified to be on the Supreme Court. And President Obama was honest. It was about ideology. So when he was a senator, it was okay to consider ideology. Mm-hmm. Now that he's president, it's supposed to be about qualifications. The point is that people on both sides of the aisle are routinely disingenuous about how they look at Supreme Court nominees.
Do you agree, Kitty, that there's that disingenuousness that's on both sides of the aisle?
I've found that once or twice in Washington, John.
Once or twice. Once or twice. Let's go to Michael in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Good evening, Michael.
Good evening. Really enjoying your program.
Thank you.
I would like to take Kitty to task for some of the comments she made so far. You know, she seems to be identifying skin color and gender with ideologies. You know, she says eight white men are all going to think the same and come to the same conclusions. But, you know, this is the argument that's been made. I remember back when Hillary Clinton first came on the scene, we were told, America is afraid, or conservatives are afraid of strong women. No, we're afraid of liberals. And now, when Sarah Palin came on the scene, conservatives were not afraid of Sarah Palin because she was a woman. I mean, this is, and it's like Clarence Thomas when he was being put on the Supreme Court. You know, well, the NAACP, which is supposed to be for the advancement of colored people, opposed him because he wasn't liberal. I mean, here he was, a black man being put on the Supreme Court, and they opposed it because the NAACP has no diversity. They're all Democrats. They're in bed with the Democrat Party. They're liberals.
Actually, George Bush Senior is a member of the NAACP, as is Barbara Bush. Yeah. Just FYI.
Okay. So that makes them diverse intellectually.
He misunderstood me. I don't think all eight white men should be making a decision. I also don't think eight white women or eight black men or eight black women or eight Hispanic. But I think there's always strength in diversity in any situation.
But what about Dan Prof's point? Who cares if there's eight or nine black women on the Supreme Courts? The NBA is 85% black. Fans of the NBA don't – that fact doesn't detract from their enjoyment of the game.
It's who's got the chops.
I think basketball is a little bit different.
No, it's not.
Let's talk about a couple.
I disagree, Dan.
But here's why it's not. This is not like we're entitled to our own opinion. Let's have a discussion about it. It's a perfect analogy because it's based on aptitude. It's based on talent. It's based on who's got the chops for the game.
So you're saying women don't have the talent to be on the Supreme Court?
I'm the one who just said that I don't care if nine women are the nine Supreme Court justices. So let's try and follow me here for 4 seconds. It is about who has the intellectual capacity, who has the chops, just like it's about in the NBA, who can make the jump shots and who can dribble and who can pass. It's not about does it accurately reflect the demographics of the population. It's about who's got ability.
I never said that. You really didn't listen,
David. Let's listen to what you just said.
There was a case in the Supreme Court this term where the court invalidated a strip search of a young girl when the school was looking for Tylenol, right? And in the oral argument, there was some jokes made by the male members of the court about, oh, I remember what it's like to have to be naked in the locker room. It's not that big a deal. And Justice Ginsburg, through her questioning, made a point about how humiliating it can be, particularly for a young female, to be subject to a strip search and a body cavity search. I think that's a perfect example of where gender diversity can shed some light on the legal issue of a case in a way that might not happen if you didn't have any women on the court.
Precisely.
What about that, Dan?
Well, what was the decision in that case? What was the split?
The decision was to invalidate.
No,
the search.
But what were the numbers? What was the vote?
It was not a 5-4 decision.
So there were men who voted for.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no. But right. My point is that it's good to hear voices with experience different than your own.
Of course. I mean, nobody's saying check your experience, check your gender and identity at the door. But what Kitty and the gender identity, race identity Democrats want to do, that's the lead. That's the first qualification.
So, Dan, what's
not
the difference between what you just said and empathy?
Because it has
you
nothing.
You just said that you don't check your experience at the door. That means you have empathy.
We have empathy as carbon-based life forms, Kitty.
So why is it wrong for Sonia Sotomayor to have empathy?
If you want to ask a question, then listen to the answer. We have empathy as carbon-based life forms. Okay. The difference is, Obama wants to lead with that. Obama wants to make that part of the prism through which you look at the law, and that is wrong. That is wrong. You can never separate yourself from your experience, but you look at the law and you apply the law as it's written. That's what judges are supposed to do.
We are going to be back on Beyond the Beltway, our stimulating discussion here. 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. Closing comment on Sotomayor from David Yellen. Is this something that is an established fact that empathy is an important thing? Is it not an important thing?
Well, President Obama made a mistake in emphasizing the idea of empathy. It's something that has to be part of a judge's job, but it's something that ought to be just in the background. He probably regrets having highlighted that as an issue. Every member of the Supreme Court has empathy as a human being, but that's not the main qualification for being on the court.
In 15 seconds, David, do you think that if Obama is reelected in 2012, between now and the end of that second term, 2016, will a current conservative, retire from the court?
Only if health issues arise. None of the conservative members of the court are of an age where demographically you'd expect them to be gone in the next 7 years.
We will be back right after this break. A whole lot more to come. 1-800-723-8289. This is Beyond the Beltway from Chicago.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
OnStar emergency. Hello. I want to contact the 911 center.
911.
This is OnStar Emergency. One of our customers has been involved in a vehicle crash with airbag deployment on Sheep Lane. The direction of impact was on the right side, and the maximum reported delta V is 24 miles per hour.
Hi, ma'am.
Yes, the car's in a creek. The water is up to the door. I can't get the door open.
Is the car moving?
No. My lip hurts so bad.
We're going to get an ambulance out there to you.
Oh, my God.
In a crash, an OnStar advisor can automatically receive an alert and share your exact GPS location and critical crash details with first responders, so they're better prepared to help.
I hear a siren. They're coming.
I hope things work out for you.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 14 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
I'm Mark Galberian, president of Goldline. Call Goldline today at 800-913-GOLD. And let us show you how you can acquire gold that's shipped directly to you. That's gold you can hold in your hand, not some paper promise. You receive free shipping on your first order, and there's no sales tax. The number to call is 800-913-GOLD. Call now, and we'll send you a free brochure, newsletter, and DVD. Don't wait to get this valuable information. Call 800-913-GOLD. 800-913-GOLD.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221. For your in-home 60-day risk-free trial, that's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
I'm a human resources professional.
This is Chet from Sneed's Ferry, North Carolina.
Gray means you're old, period. Long in tooth. I used Just for Men. It makes me perform better.
So we asked, should a guy get rid of his gray with Just for Men?
Absolutely. I'd flat out tell him, guy, you got to do something with your hair. You got to make yourself look younger because they cannot ask you how old you are.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
Announcing the Ally Bank Online Savings Account with an interest rate of 1.85% APY. If you're waiting for terms and conditions, forget about it. It really is that straightforward. Nothing confusing, hazy, ambiguous, dubious, or dodgy. No double dealing, double speak, or three-card Monty. Just an online savings account that offers a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. So call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or visit allybank.com for more straightforwardness. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
Live from Chicago, this is John Dempsey with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary from Republican Dan Proft, Democrat Kitty Kurth, and David Yellen, the Dean of Loyola University's Chicago's School of Law. Our special phone guest tonight is Adam Clymer, former Washington correspondent for the New York Times and the Baltimore Sun, and author of Edward M. Kennedy, a biography. Our program tonight coming to you from the XM Sirius studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free phone lines are now open, 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. We are going to be talking about President Obama's health care proposal. But first, we're going to talk about a man who has battled for universal health care for nearly his entire career in Washington, one of the most influential and controversial figures in American politics, Senator Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts. Ted Kennedy is now battling brain cancer. He's been absent from Capitol Hill for most of this year. And we will talk tonight about Teddy Kennedy because of the health care battle in Congress, but also because tonight is the 40th anniversary of one of the most defining moments in Ted Kennedy's life, the death of Mary Jo Kopechne, in what will forever be known as the Chappaquiddick incident. We'll have more with our guests after this background report from Ben Stewart.
Thank you, John. 40 years and one day, in fact, after the Chappaquiddick incident, Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy has been reelected no fewer than 7 times, only once with less than 60% of the vote, and that was during the 1994 Republican tide sweeping into Congress. Controversy has at times marred his 46 years in office. July 18, 1969, Kennedy's car veers off a wooden bridge on Chappaquiddick Island in Massachusetts. While he escaped, his passenger, Mary Jo Kopechne, a former secretary for Kennedy's brother Robert, drowned. Questions over the incident, including why he didn't report it to police for 10 hours, helped bring down his 1980 primary campaign against then-President Carter. However, the Lion of the Senate has remained popular at home and highly influential in the chamber. As he fights a brain tumor at his house on Cape Cod, the battle over one of his signature issues, health reform, continues in Congress. legislators from both parties have publicly lamented his absence. While Kennedy usually takes deeply liberal stands, he's established a record of making deals with Republicans when necessary to get laws passed. And he could still cast a vote on health care reform. Though he has not been on Capitol Hill since April, he returned from treatment last July to cast a decisive vote on children's health insurance. And when he did, he was greeted with a rousing ovation from both sides of the aisle. From Beyond the Beltway, I'm Ben Stewart reporting.
Ben, thank you very much. Adam Clymer is the author of Edward M. Kennedy, A Biography. Adam, we welcome you to the program tonight. And you heard in Ben's setup piece the controversy of Ted Kennedy, but also the enormous legislative success. Do we call Ted Kennedy a tragic figure?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there's no question that the death of Mary Jo Kopechne was a tragedy for her, and it put an end to his presidential hopes, though he didn't necessarily know it just then. But he's been one of the great senators in the history of the institution. He's done more, he's had more impact on American lives than either of his brothers or than most presidents you can think of. Whether it's from voting at 18 to getting Meals on Wheels as a senior citizen. It's every civil rights measure of the last 30 years he's had a significant hand in, most of all the Americans with Disability Act. I think he's someone who, though he says he thinks of Mary Jo Kopechne every day of his life, has reason to be proud of a career in the Senate.
What can we make of the way he handled the incident in Chappaquiddick? And we don't want to, you know, re-fight that whole battle here tonight. But the way that the fact that it happened and the way he handled the incident, I think Ben has said, probably sank his 1980 primary battle with Jimmy Carter. Do you agree with that? Had it not been for Chappaquiddick, do you think he might have defeated Jimmy Carter in that Democratic primary?
He might very well have. One can't know it, but you can be sure that was a critical element in his loss of a number of primaries. I mean, Carter was a tough candidate. It's hard to say one thing changes it, but I think that the Chappaquiddick precluded his ever being elected. He handled it abominably. I don't think he'd argue with that. One element that is a minor amelioration is that he'd suffered a moderate concussion. And his family didn't want to talk about that because I think they thought it might serve to disqualify him from public office in some fashion. But that's a fact that came out during the inquest, and it may have had some impact on the way he behaved.
Well,
Dan Prof,
and
Dan Prof,
he also, too, it wasn't in the report, but he pled guilty to leaving the scene of an accident. He probably should have been facing more significant charges because, as I recall, at least some of the stuff that I've read about that incident, based on the autopsy results, Mary Jo Kopechne was alive for several hours after the car was submerged. Because
I think that's – I don't believe that's correct. Yep. That's one of the many assertions, but I don't think that's true. He probably should have been charged with something more serious, and there's no indication that the district attorney involved really wanted to make a case against him.
So did the local did the local authorities bungle the case because of who he was?
I think that's probably a fair conclusion.
Kitty, you spent time in Massachusetts working for Paul Tsongas.
I've spent a lot of time in Massachusetts. I've worked with members of the Kennedy Party, but during Chappaquiddick, I was at camp. You know, I don't have a real strong sense of
it. Kitty, how do you feel about the fact that we're talking about this tonight? The man is dying of brain cancer. Should we not even be discussing
this?
Oh, no.
I mean, it's part of history. You know, it's part of history. It's a significant part of history, but I'm just saying I do not have a strong sense of it. It's not something I've studied, and I was at camp.
David Yellen.
Oh, I agree that Chappaquiddick ended his presidential ambitions. I remember 1980. I'm a Democrat. I didn't much like Jimmy Carter, but I couldn't support Ted Kennedy in 1980 because of Chappaquiddick.
And there's something else that happened in 80 as well. When he was doing an interview, I always get this wrong, but I believe it was Roger Mudd.
Roger Mudd, yeah.
He did an interview where Roger Mudd asked him why he was running for president, and he couldn't answer the question. And I know this because I use that interview with every candidate that I train about the fact that you need to know why you're running.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that Chappaquiddick certainly didn't help, but I think it was then compounded with he just ran a bad campaign.
We are going to take a break. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway from Chicago tonight. 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. Back with more after this.
I'll see a movie tonight.
Here's what's new at the box office. Seduction on the Sahara, rated R.
Oh, heard good things. What time?
7:30, 9:45, and 11:10.
I could do 7:30. Hey, I don't suppose you're free.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Oh, right, well, I'm really busy, no big deal.
Someone missing from your summer? Match.com's free summer quick start will help you meet somebody unforgettable with a few simple secrets that have never been told before.
Only at Match.com.
I wasn't getting past a certain point with the interviews.
This is Tamar from Washington, D.C.
Gray kind of says, does he have the energy to do the job?
And then Tamar tried Just for Men.
And when I went into the interview, I just went into the interview with a new renewed energy or something. And it was the first time I left the place knowing I had the job. It really wasn't anything magical or anything, but it was magical to me.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
From coast to coast, from border to border, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway tonight from Chicago. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Our number, 1-800-723-8289. Our panel tonight, Republican Dan Proft, Democrat Kitty Kurth, and David Yellen, the dean of Loyola University, Chicago's School of Law. On the phone, we are joined by Adam Clymer, the former Washington correspondent for the New York Times and the author of Edward M. Kennedy, a biography, this being the 40th anniversary of Chappaquiddick. And Adam, I understand that you just have a new edition of your book out. Is that right?
Yes, it originally came out 10 years ago, and I've updated it with the things that have happened since then.
What kind of, obviously, his relationship with President Bush, the Iraq War, things like that are included?
Yeah, I mean, he worked with Bush and against him, as he has with most presidents. I mean, one of the great talents of Kennedy has been that despite all the millions of dollars Republicans have raised promising to protect the country from Ted Kennedy, there's hardly a major piece of legislation, except maybe for a minimum wage increase somewhere, that he didn't do with a major Republican ally, sometimes one who got more credit than Ted did.
So why is that perception out there that if you look in the dictionary under raving left-wing liberal, you see Ted Kennedy's picture there, when in fact he's got a lot of Republican friends, and he works with Republicans on a lot of these issues?
Oh, because I think essentially the right wing needs enemies just as the left wing does, and he makes a convenient one. It's not the perception in Washington anymore.
Well, Dan Proft. Yeah, he does make a convenient one, you're right, because of his personal history. But also, too, I mean, he's a left wing ideologue. I mean, on a lot of the big policy ideas and debates of the last, at least since I've been around, let's say the last 30 years, whether it's the Equal Rights Amendment or a nuclear freeze during the 80s and Reagan, and certainly on a government takeover of healthcare, Ted Kennedy is kind of one of the leading voices for the left wing. And so he's a legitimate target, too, because there are substantive philosophical and policy disagreements.
Kitty
Well, I wouldn't say anything that he proposes amounts to a government takeover of health care. That sounds to me like a right-wing slogan.
Well, that's what the legislation currently pending is, and that's what he has spoken
well,
about.
I don't think so.
Well, okay, you might not think so. You should read the bill. But
actually, I have.
All 1,000 pages. I'm impressed. That's more than your Democratic friends in Congress have done.
How about my Republican friends?
Probably your Republican friends, too, which is part of the problem. I concede the point. But the point is that Ted Kennedy has spoken too, not just in this current iteration of legislation, but he has always advocated a single payer system, as has Barack Obama and others who are now trying to get kind of through the back door what they can't get through the front door.
Kitty Kurth, do you think that Kennedy deserves this raving liberal tag, given how he does work on the other side of the aisle?
Well, I think despite the fact that he works with everybody across the aisle, Orrin Hatch is very close to him. They've worked together over the years. I think he's probably pretty proud to be called a raving liberal by the people that call him that.
Ted Kennedy has just written a piece for the current Newsweek entitled "The Cause of My Life: Inside the Fight for Universal Health Care." And in this piece, Adam, he emphasizes over and over the superlative health care he's received in his life as a wealthy man and as a member of the U.S. Senate. And I guess he seems to be making the point that what he wants is just for every American to have the level of health care that he has had. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so, although not necessarily through the government. Certainly the current legislation doesn't involve that. It involves making it easier to buy private insurance for the most part.
But isn't the whole thing we hear about the government option, isn't that one of the main things that's making a lot of Republicans and moderate Democrats leery about this bill?
Yeah, that is their fear as to what it might lead to.
Well,
I think it's because they're not understanding that it's public option. Not that all health care would be public, but you could buy insurance. You could have the public option. For somebody like me, a small business owner whose insurance premiums were $250 a month for two people in 1998, and in 2008, when I finally had to give up health insurance, our premiums for the same care, neither of us was sick, $1,800 a month. That's crazy. To me, that's not having an option because it's not affordable. What they're trying to make it is that so somebody like me, a small business, would be able to pool with other people and either buy a public option or buy through a buying pool so that we could have insurance.
Let's go to Ron listening to us on WLS, our flagship station. Ron is in Bolingbrook, Illinois. Hi, Ron.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
Yes, a few comments. I think that President Obama and the Democrats' health care plan is a disaster. You read on page 16, and this is very naive on the Democrats' part, it states that if you have private health care insurance, and once the public option is enacted, that the private insurance companies will no longer be able to accept new enrollees. Therefore, those private insurance companies are going to basically wither away, and the public option will be the only option.
Well, that's exactly what's going to happen. And certainly you might be left with a couple mega private insurers, but certainly the small insurers are going to go away. You're talking about an 8% payroll tax increase on small businesses that don't provide health insurance right now. They're not required to by law. So you're talking about a huge hit. You talk about this is good for small business.
8% would be way less than what I pay now.
You're going to put small businesses out of business. They're not going to hire people. And the full-time people they have, they'll put on part-time. And this is being marketed as just like Medicare. And so tell me again about how this isn't a government takeover that when they're modeling what they're trying to do for folks under 65 after the Medicare program. This is exactly what this is about. The caller is right on the mark.
Ron.
Well, I get Medicare, and I choose my own doctor.
Yeah, and I took care of my dying mother who had Medicare last year, and it worked out really well.
Are the Medicare reimbursement rates what they
Medicare's
should do.
Medicare's insolvent.
The doctors who I dealt with for a year were much happier to take payments from Medicare than her Humana plan. They would always try to go to Medicare first and then the private insurers because Medicare was quicker, less paperwork, and easier to handle.
Ron, thank you very much. Adam, what are your thoughts about the option, the government option?
Look, I'm not a policymaker. I covered previous iterations of this fight. I understand both sets of arguments, and I think one of the things that we're talking both about Kennedy and health care, Kennedy's absence from the Senate these days makes it a great deal harder to come to any accommodation on these things, simply because, as we've said, he has the ability to work across party lines. He has the ability to say, look, there's this provision that we like that you hate, and there's this provision that you like and we hate, and maybe we can take 60% of one and 70% of the other and make an agreement. It's the bill that came out of his committee with Chris Dodd running it isn't going to be the final legislation. Nobody thinks it is.
But is it a bargaining chip? Is it right that President Obama seems to want to really get this thing done by the end of the summer, by the August recess? Is that reasonable, Adam?
It's going to be very difficult. I don't know whether it's doable, and I think he's talking basically about getting each house to pass it rather than a final piece of legislation, but I think it's going to be awfully hard to accomplish.
David Yellen.
Well, I'm really no expert in this area, but just recently I know people who are not leaving jobs and not leaving marriages exclusively because if they do, they will not have health insurance. And that seems like a crazy system.
And Adam, you're absolutely right. I think health care would be moving along at a quicker pace if Senator Kennedy was there. I think Adam hit it on the head. Where Kennedy's strengths lied were in pushing major pieces of legislation like this and getting the Republicans and the Democrats talking to everybody, figuring out where they can agree.
Let's go to Mark from Salinas, Kansas. Mark is a host on KBOI. Good evening, Mark. Welcome. Mark, are you with us? Mark has dropped off the line. Is Ken with us, KBOI, in Fayette, Idaho? Are you with us, Ken?
Oh, well, you guys were talking about Ted Kennedy, and all I can tell you is I was a great admirer of his wife, Joan, who was a concert pianist. And she came to a bad end through alcoholism. And I'm just sitting here thinking, well, what drove her into alcoholism? Because how do you take a woman through college and all that work that she did, and living with this guy, and all of his peccadilloes that he came up with? And I personally think he put a good woman down, and it was mainly because of his moral values.
Ken.
And I think ever since then, he has been trying to make amends.
Ken, thank you very much. Adam Clymer will say goodbye to you, but I guess the bottom line is that Ted Kennedy, a flawed character, but also a very effective senator and a vital figure in American politics. Is that your view?
I think that's fair.
Adam Clymer, former New York Times reporter, is the author of the new updated edition, Edward M. Kennedy, A Biography. It's out just now. Adam, thank you for being with us. I'm John Dempsey, in for Bruce Dumont tonight on Beyond the Beltway. A lot more coming up. Join us at 1-800-723-8289.
I'd worked at for 12 years, shut down, and I was looking for another place to work.
This is Danny from Baton Rouge.
And I think that first impression they get sometimes is a little too old. You know, why should we mess with him?
Then Danny got rid of his gray with Just for Men.
You know, they're not seeing the gray in the mustache, and they're not seeing the gray in the side of my hair. You know, if you feel better about yourself, you're going to feel better about everything else.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
And now, another reason to switch to Geico.
Every month, we get lots of letters telling us how much folks like Geico's claim service. And I quote, "The adjuster assigned to my claim was incredible. He walked me through everything." Then there's this one. Geico.com is very useful and lets you track your claims. And this. I filed a claim at 4:15 on Thursday afternoon, and my car was in the shop at 10 a.m. on Friday. And my personal favorite, easy squeezy lemon peasy.
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
We are back tonight on Beyond the Beltway. I'm John Dempsey sitting in for Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. We've been talking about Ted Kennedy. We've been talking about the battle over health care. President Obama has said he wants the health care plan, this $1.5 trillion plan, passed by the August recess. Kitty Kurth, is the president rushing it by having it such a big priority, trying to get it done so quickly?
I think if he doesn't set a date certain that he wants it done by, it'll languish. And I think he probably doesn't expect that it'll be done by then. But if he asks it to be done by then, they'll be taking it seriously. They'll be working on it. And if he didn't set a date certain, it would take another. I mean, when was John Dingell's father first introduced health care reform in 1940-something? You know, I think we've waited long enough.
Well, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, single payer was a bad idea in 48, and it's still a bad idea 60 years later. I mean, that's the problem. And Obama just hit a real bump in the road, which is why he's pressing now. When the CBO came out this week and said, despite what Obama and the congressional Democrats said about this was going to save money because of the wondrous administrative cost savings you were going to see with government takeover, in fact, it's going to cost $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. That's a real problem. So that's why he's putting his foot to the metal.
Kitty, how serious was that blow, the CBO report this week?
Well, the one thing that I learned working in Washington was you can get any set of numbers that you want from anywhere. CBO has numbers. GAO has numbers. When I founded the Concord Coalition for Paul Tsongas and Warren Rudman, we were working on the deficit. I think coming, you know, from Chicago, the backwoods of Chicago, the most important lesson I learned was there's a lot of sets of numbers in D.C.
So were you cooking
the
books?
You can get numbers to say anything.
Yeah, but the Congressional Budget Office is bipartisan, number one. It is something that it is a source that members on both parties look to for scoring on the financial impact of legislation.
It's one source.
I think people basically don't believe that we can have comprehensive health reform and not spend a lot more money to get there. Because after all, we have millions and millions of people who are not insured, and I think that's a travesty, but we need to address
it. But should the president then not be saying we're doing this to save money when the CBO report came out that says it will not save us money, it will be more expensive?
Well, I think there's a lot of other really thoughtful people. In addition to CBO, the ex-presidents, and I'm not going to be able to think of the website, but Carter and Ford, when he was still alive, and several of the ex-presidents all signed on to a health plan, signed on to saying this, supported a health plan that actually did look at everything and said, no, we are going to save money if we cover everybody because of not only if we get everybody on the system and get the paperwork all digitized, but also, you know, going to an emergency room is costing a lot more. And people, you know, people laugh at that, but it's not a joke. You know, when you pay $20,000 for an emergency room for something that you could have gone to the doctor for and paid $2,000 or paid $500 for, we're all paying for that. Those costs are going to go down if people have health care. Health insurance.
Let's go to Susan in Chicago listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. Good evening, Susan.
Good evening. I think it's before it's too late, people need to know how frightening this House bill is, which could be passed in a matter of a couple of weeks. In part, in order to pay for it, there will be rationing of health care, limiting of the operations, the procedures, the drugs. And guess which population will have this rationing? Seniors.
Of course, because that's where the cost center is.
I'd like to...
May I finish, please? incurable diseases. It's ironic. I don't think Ted Kennedy would get the treatment he has now. He has incurable brain cancer. He's on very expensive drugs. He is, in his 80s?
He's in his 70s.
Under socialized medicine in Britain would not get this, and probably under the House plan he would not get this. And yet this bill in the House will cover illegal aliens. So you have a situation where a young illegal alien will get the care and the heart operation for a senior, someone who's been a citizen, paying taxes all his life, fought in World War II or Korea, will be denied health care. This is absolutely appalling.
Susan, thank you. Let's give Kitty Kurth a chance to respond.
Excellent job on reciting the Republican talking points. That was very well done, but sadly, it's just not true. Right now, there is rationing. How many times do health insurance providers tell you, no, you can't have that test? No, you're in an HMO, you can't go to that doctor. There is rationing right now. One of my friends had Blue Cross Blue Shield. She had a kidney and pancreas transplant. Blue Cross Blue Shield said everything was fine. They okayed her transplant. A year later, they came back to her, and she's a Republican, by the way, Dan. A year later, they came back to her, and they said, now you owe us $350,000. She had to not only declare bankruptcy, fire all her employees, but now she's working part-time at a bookstore and not, you know, she doesn't have her small business that was providing insurances. There is rationing going on every day, not just for older people, but very much for older people, for everybody. Hell, it's just the insurance companies who are out to make a profit and to make money who are doing the rationing, not the government who is not in it to make money.
Oh, so there won't be rationing with government.
There'll be less.
There'll be less rationing with government.
That's not
the experience. I mean, I everybody has anecdotes to share, and everybody could tell heart-wrenching tales one way or the other. And I could tell one about a friend in Canada who had to come here because he didn't want to wait 4 months for an MRI, and that worsened his health situation until he finally got to Mayo Clinic. We all have anecdotes to share. The bottom line is this, that the experience in Canada and Britain and other countries that have single payer system is not an experience that we want to replicate in this country.
I would love to replicate that system.
Well, then you don't know what's going on, or you want to see everybody's healthcare decline. You want to wait 4 months to see your primary care physician. You want this country to stop being the leading innovator of medical technology, of new pharmaceuticals, life saving drugs. That's what you want if you're advocating single payer.
I'd like accessible, affordable health care. I'd like us to have the best health care. Dan, can I finish? I'd let you finish.
Then get the government
out of it. Not the most expensive health care. I want the best health care.
Let's go to Cindy in Champaign, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Hey, listen, I've been first of all, I want to say, Kitty, of course, they don't want to accept the Humana insurance first because the rules are that you have to bill Medicare before you bill Humana. Secondly, I wonder if this health care plan is going to require all providers of care to accept this insurance. So do I have a choice as a health care provider whether or not I want to accept this public option as a payer to me? Do you guys know the answer?
Do you know the answer, Kitty?
The answer is you will not have an option in the current form. That is right. That's exactly the point. That's why this public option nonsense is just another Orwellian name for a bad idea.
But here's the thing. So if I'm a provider of care and I don't choose to accept as a provider of care payment from this plan, then what happens to me? Do I still get to accept the other insurance companies out there?
Well, to the extent there are other insurance companies that exist, I don't know. But one of the other things that's still undecided, at least from what I know about this legislation, is any other additional penalties or restrictions, parameters for questions like you ask.
Let's go to Adam listening to us on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hi, Adam. Good evening.
Hi. How are you doing? Good evening.
Good.
I was calling in. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. But I work in the oil and gas industry, and I'm listening to the conversation. I have to give up my health care. My family isn't covered. But that's a long conversation for you all. But right now, my comment is Dan needs to learn some conversational skills because he's killing his cause. Every time he opens his mouth, he's going to tune people out. Nobody's going to listen to you, Dan. You're going to have to learn how to talk to people. If you don't, you're going to nobody wants to hear from you. Irritating the hell out of me, and otherwise I might support your views.
You need
to become a more enlightened person and listen.
I just listened to you. Thanks for the
tip. Thank you. Thank you, Adam. Let's go to Mark in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I think you folks are doing a real great disservice to the public because this plan is so radical and you're thinking this is going to get passed by August? Could you imagine?
We're not thinking that. We're just pointing out that the president would like it to pass by August. But we don't have any position here tonight. We're just talking about what's going on in Washington.
Could you imagine the typical Joe having his money confiscated through the IRS to pay for this? That's insane. I can't see this passing.
It is very quick to pass this kind of a
But unfortunately, you need to take a real close look at the current makeup of the Congress. There's a real possibility that this could move, and that's why people are mobilizing.
But isn't it also true that because of the Republican opposition and the opposition from the moderate to conservative Democrats, that this does face a real uphill battle?
I think it does face an uphill battle, and I would just like to ask Dan, what plan do you advocate that would make for small businesses like me, that would make an affordable, accessible health care plan?
I'm so glad you asked. I've got all kinds of good ideas. One of the things that we should do, one of the problems why health care is so expensive, as I keep saying, is because government's so involved right now. So one thing that if you're a small business owner in Illinois, you can't buy policies that are offered in Indiana. You can't buy a policy that's offered in Georgia. We should increase the competition in the system, not limit it. That means people, health insurance providers, insurance companies should be able to offer policies to anybody in the country. You shouldn't be limited by the state in which you reside, by states that you've been authorized to offer plans in. One of the big problems and one of the reasons that healthcare is so expensive is because you have different states with different levels of mandates that drive different cost structures.
What would you do about pre-existing conditions?
Let's answer that question after the break. That's Kitty Kurth and Dan Proft. I don't think Kitty Proft is going to happen. I don't see you guys marrying tonight. I'm John Dempsey. This is Beyond the Beltway. Join us from Chicago, 1-800-723-8289.
I've worked in the dot-coms and in technology for the last 20 years. I noticed that there were a lot of younger guys, and I started not getting jobs.
This is John from Utah.
You were treated differently if you had gray hair and you were an older guy, and that's not only just at work, but everywhere.
Then John got rid of his gray with Just for Men.
You know, I started getting jobs, and they don't think of me as an old guy. The majority of the people I associate with are 20 or 30 years my junior, and I get along just fine with them.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.
Introducing Ally Bank's 9-month no-penalty CD with an interest rate of 1.9% APY. Just to make that perfectly clear, that's a no-penalty CD. No penalty as in no punishment, no extra fees, no forfeiture, nothing even vaguely penalty-like, and absolutely no fine print. Just a 9-month no-penalty CD that lets you move all your money anytime, anywhere. It doesn't get more straightforward than that. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or visit allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
We are back on Beyond the Beltway. I'm John Dempsey, sitting in for Bruce Dumont tonight, 1-800-723-8289. Before the break, Kitty Kurth wanted to make a point to Dan Proft.
I just wanted to ask him a question about if he, under the, if it's going to be all a private system like it is now, but with more competition, what would he do to make pre-existing conditions covered and make it really not only accessible but affordable so that people could pay for it without health care being as much as your mortgage?
Well, I mean, you know, one of the things, like I'm talking about, you know, you have these mandates on the plans that health insurance companies have to offer, and that increases the price. So basically what you have now, here's how the system works right now. Everybody goes to a restaurant to eat, and they order whatever they want on the menu. There's no prices on the menu. And then when the bill comes, it's based on who can pay what. And so if that was how people went out to eat, then everybody would go out to eat all the time, because if you couldn't pay, so what? Somebody else is paying. And if you could pay, you don't know where the price is. I mean, that's what the healthcare is. You have cost disconnected of the provider and the consumer are disconnected. There are no cost containment measures, which is why Medicare is insolvent, which is why you have these skyrocketing costs, and that gets passed on to people who have the ability to pay.
I don't understand.
Is the employer, Dan? Let me ask, is the employer based system, is it working? Should there be a change?
There should be a lot of changes. Health insurance should, in my worldview, okay, I don't have a piece of legislation drafted, but just kind of philosophically looking at it, it should be portable. It should be like car insurance, which is it attaches to you so that whether you lose your job or you take another job, if you like the plan that you have now, then that's what you have. And that's what you pay for.
I just wanted to say I agree with Dan Proft. I just want to write this down.
Wow.
I agree with Dan Proft.
This is
date in history. It's 8751.
So you agree that it should be portable.
Absolutely. Keep going, Dan.
No, but the other things that you can do, health savings accounts have proven very effective, particularly in terms of driving costs down because you've got the customer in charge of the money and understanding what the prices are.
They can decide to have money taken out of their check pre-tax that they can
spend.
Right,
and with tax incentives, we should incentivize more money so that people can make their health care decisions. Let me give you one example of a true private market example in healthcare versus this kind of hybrid private-public thing that we've had for so long. LASIK surgery. LASIK surgery, eye surgery, is not covered by Medicare. It's not covered by most health insurance plans. It's not covered by Medicaid, so on and so forth. It's elective. In the last 10 years since LASIK was introduced, the cost of LASIK surgery has gone down 40%. Because of competition, because of the marketplace. And those are the kind of first principles that need to be applied when you're looking at healthcare reform. Nobody is saying the status quo. If you're not for the Obama plan, then you're for the status quo. No, we're not for the status quo. But the problem with healthcare and why costs are spiraling out of control is because of government intervention in the system already. The point is to move government out of the system.
Any thoughts, Dave?
I hear a lot of interesting things on both sides. I don't think that government is the main problem. It sounds like a Ronald Reagan kind of line.
Well, it's the biggest purchaser.
I think there are just a couple of basic principles. One is that we can't afford as a society for everyone to get the health care that Ted Kennedy is getting right now, and that's an unrealistic aspiration. On the other side, it's a travesty that we alone among the advanced industrial countries don't have basic health coverage for the poorest among us. Sort of everything else.
But we do. I mean, Medicare and Medicare, Medicaid, SCHIP, I mean, those are for poor people who can't otherwise afford it. There's a difference between health insurance and health care. Nobody has denied care, particularly urgent care, when they need it, right, in this country, even illegal aliens.
But that's an incredibly inefficient way.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. But, I mean, understand that the health insurance and health care, it's a little bit of a different debate. Nobody has denied health care in this country.
Well, I should have phrased it a little differently. It's a travesty that we don't have basic health care and preventive care and the kind of things that will have a lot of cost savings for all Americans.
Let's go to Stacy listening to us on WLS in Chicago. Hi, Stacy.
Thank you for taking my call. A couple of things I wanted to that I haven't heard anyone address. Health insurance also, people compare us to other countries, but we have the highest obesity in the world. And no one talks about lifestyle. Lifestyle choices are high, teenage pregnancy rates, all these lifestyle.
Stacey.
When it's cool to do your own thing started in the 60s, there's a price for it. There's no free lunch.
Thank you, Stacey. Thank you very much. Kitty, why should I, the taxpayer, pay for somebody who chooses to gorge themselves at McDonald's and lose weight?
Well,
why should I have to pay for that person's health care?
I think that we should all be in a buying pool so that we're in the biggest buying pool so that the really healthy and the really sick all balance out and we all pay at the same rates.
Well, see, this is what happens. I mean, you know, when you do kind of one size fits all, what happens is you equalize downward. Rarely has there been a system – actually, there's no system I know of where the government has taken over something to provide everybody with the same benefit, and it's been an equalization upwards. It's an equalization downwards. So for the people that are paying the freight in this country, you know, the quality of care that you're going to have access to is going to decline if you have a government as the provider here. And the caller makes a legitimate point. When this, it's always talked about how America has a higher or a lower life expectancy than other industrialized nations. But part of it is lifestyle. We have higher homicide rates, we have higher incidence of deadly traffic accidents, and we have higher obesity rates.
What is your in 10 seconds? If we came back 1 year from now, what would the healthcare picture look like in this?
I'd like something like Sweden, where there's basic coverage for everybody, and then you can buy a premium insurance package on top of that if you want to.
And what do you think is going to happen, Dan? The Democrats are in control.
Well, right now, I'm in defense mode, so I just hope this is stopped for now.
And David Yellen, you just want there to be something different than what we have now.
Something with a little more fairness for people who aren't having their basic needs met now, and the option for people to have more than what the government guarantees.
That's David Yellen. He is the dean at Loyola University of Chicago's School of Law. Our liberal tonight has been Kitty Kurth, our Republican Dan Proft. Thank you, one and all. Beyond the Beltway is a Genevieve production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, and Larry Kahn. Tom Veracruz, Ben Stewart, and Kate Shepard have helped make this program possible. Until next time, Bruce Dumont will be back. This is John Dempsey. Good night from Chicago.
Your 401k is in danger. Your IRA is in trouble. The U.S. paper dollar is unstable. As you hear me talk, you're losing net worth fast. To make matters worse, huge government spending is devaluing your money even faster. High rates of inflation are rolling toward you like a tidal wave of loss. Don't just sit there. Protect your portfolio and your family. Buy gold now, direct and wholesale with United Gold Group.
Gold prices have tripled since 2001, and many experts predict the prices will climb another 100%. The demand is strong, and the timing may never be better. When you buy from us, you're buying direct and getting wholesale prices. Call us and learn what other gold companies don't want you to know.
United Gold's 2009 Investors Kit will supply you with everything you need to know about the advantages of buying gold direct, cutting out the middleman. Your Gold Investors Kit is yours absolutely free if you call now. 800-610-4840. Supplies are limited, so call right away. You'll also get the secrets on how to own gold in your retirement account. Call now. 800-610-4840. 800-610-4840.
It's the medicine your mom gave you as a kid. The medicine you trusted when you were pregnant. And for many, it's what you rely on to ease arthritis pain. Tylenol has been trusted for over 50 years. And while store brands make pills that look just like Tylenol, it's important to know they're not made by Tylenol. The only way to get the brand you've trusted your whole life, the brand doctors recommend most, is to buy the brand doctors recommend most. Feel better. Tylenol. Use only as directed.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221. For your in-home 60-day risk-free trial, that's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
Summer road trip. Just me and the open road.
Turn right in 0.2 miles.
And you, of course, m'lady.
Turn left in 1 mile.
Thanks. Look at us. Just talking away the hours. Chit-chat, chit-chat. Hey, I'm gonna pull over for coffee.
You want anything?
Recalculating.
Sounds like someone needs a double.
Someone missing from your summer? Match.com's free summer quick start will help you meet somebody unforgettable with a few simple secrets that have never been told before.
Only at Match.com.
You know, I'd get the interview easily with my resume and everything, and then I'd walk in and I could just see their, you know, you can just see their expression. They think I'm too old.
This is Andy from Sydney, Ohio.
And a friend just told me, you know, one day he said, why don't you try coloring your hair? And I said, worth a try. And the very next interview I had, I got the job. It could be coincidence, but I doubt it.
For essential career tips and a free offer, go to justformen.monster.com. That's justformen.monster.com.